The headlines. Palestinians gather in front of the UN's office in the Gaza Strip to mark the 75th anniversary of Nakba Day. Ukraine says Russia has launched an intense air attack on Kyiv, using drones, cruise, and probably ballistic missiles. And at least four people are killed in a shooting in the U.S. state of New Mexico, as gun violence claims more lives across the country. Thanks for joining us. The Palestinian Authority president has blamed the U.S. and the U.K. for the ongoing plight of Palestinians. Mahmoud Abbas says it is up to the colonial states to bring the sufferings of the oppressed nation to an end. He made the remark at a UN event in New York, marking the 75th anniversary of Nakba, or catastrophe. He said that Washington and London took part in rendering the Palestinian people a victim when they decided to plant another entity in their lands for their own colonial goals. Abbas also demanded that Israel be suspended from the UN if it does not respect UN resolutions and grant Palestinians a state and a right of return for millions of refugees' descendants. This is the first time the UN is commemorating Nakba Day. The General Assembly adopted a resolution in November 2022 to mark the occasion on May 15. Meanwhile, Palestinians have rallied in the West Bank city of Ramallah to mark the 75th anniversary of the Nakba.
Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip marked the 75th anniversary of the Nakba Day, also known as the Day of Catastrophe, in front of the United Nations office. Nakba Day marks the displacement of Palestinians upon the establishment of the Israeli regime in 1948, when Zionists drove out hundreds of thousands of Palestinians from the historic land of Palestine. According to UN figures, there are currently around 5 million registered Palestinian refugees. Around 1.3 million refugees live in the Gaza Strip and reside in eight refugee camps under miserable living conditions. The Palestinian Legislative Council in Gaza also held a special session commemorating 75 years of Nakba and called on the international community to stop turning a blind eye to the plight of Palestinians.
Palestinians expressing their disappointment of the UN representing the international community who had created the Zionist entity in 1948, and until now, after 75 years, they are failing to respond to the Palestinian ambitions and dreams of an independent sovereign state.
Palestinian refugees, their children and their grandchildren hold sacred the right to return to the land of their ancestors. 75 years on, Palestinian refugees say they have not lost hope of taking back what is rightfully theirs.
In this 75th anniversary of Nakba, we said our right won't fall down. We as refugees here in Gaza, we said to the Israeli occupation, we will get back to our land. If it's not today, tomorrow, if it's not us, our children. So this right won't fall down.
Every year, as Palestinians mark the Nakba, they are not only commemorating the horrors that took place 75 years ago and the demolition of some 500 villages and towns, they are also marking the Nakba, or catastrophe, that continues in different forms to this day. Last Tuesday, the Israeli regime launched a five-day onslaught on the Gaza Strip, killing and maiming scores of Palestinians, including innocent women and children.
The Palestinian Nakba of 1948 is still continue. We can see this every day here in Gaza. The last few days, the Israelis have attacked the 2.3 million innocent Palestinians, killed 33 Palestinians, wounded dozens, destroyed dozens of houses.
Nakba Day is commemorated annually by Palestinians and by millions of those who support them and their cause around the world.
Nakba Day is special for the people of Gaza, where most of the inhabitants are refugees and children of refugees. Despite decades of displacement, they refuse to give up the right of return to their hometowns and villages. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
You're committing genocide.
In Canada's largest city, young Palestinians have taken the lead in remembering 75 years of resistance and the ongoing displacement and dispossession faced by Palestinians with the commemoration of Nakba Day in the streets of downtown Toronto.
The Zionists once upon a time said that the older generation will die and that the youth will forget. And we are here today proving not only that the youth will not forget, but that the youth will take up an active role in our people's struggle for national liberation. We believe that we have a responsibility to confront Zionism in our locales, wherever Zionism is.
Well, 75 years of occupation, 75 years of crimes against humanity. We're here to stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people, and we want liberation. We believe that we are the generation of liberation.
Journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, murdered by Israeli troops 1 year ago, and political prisoner Kader Adnan were remembered among the numerous martyred and hundreds injured since the start of the year in historic Palestine amid an increase of violence by the Zionist occupation forces.
In the West Bank, we have seen continuous raids on cities like Jenin and Nablus, and these attempts have been to quell the youth that is rising up, resisting the settler colonial state that is taking away their rights and their right to live in dignity. We have seen home demolitions across historic Palestine in 48, in Al-Naqab, in Sheikh Jarrah. We have seen Palestinians being displaced. We have seen political prisoners succumb to their to medical negligence, a policy implemented by the Zionist entity intended to make sure that our political prisoners are effectively being slowly assassinated.
And so we are here saying that our prisoners carry the struggle forward and are our compass, that we will honor our martyrs and uphold their legacy. And we call on Palestinian youth and Arabs all across the world to play an active role in our struggle for national liberation.
Activists from a wide range of organizations are calling on Canadians to support Palestinian resistance by opposing Canada's contribution to Palestinian dispossession and joining the demand to end the illegal occupation. Camila Escalante, Toronto.
Moscow is no exception in commemorating Nakba Day. The ambassador of Palestine to Russia recalled the importance of Nakba so that the Palestinian cause remains alive in the memory of the Arab Islamic nation and the freedom-loving people of the world. Nakba Day designates as criminal the actions of those who provided funds and promises for the capture of Palestine from its people in the interests of the Zionist occupying entity, which committed and continues to commit the most heinous crimes against Palestinians.
I mean, today we are separating here and gathering here, I mean, to send a message for everybody that there's a right for Palestinian people. And we are need our rights. We need to live like others.
The participants assured that the Palestinians are unfailingly committed to their land and the establishment of a Palestinian state with Jerusalem Al-Quds as its capital.
Our Nakba, the memory of the catastrophe that befell the Palestinian people. We as Palestinians living in Russia mark this day here in Moscow every year. We call on all the free peoples of the world to stand in solidarity with our wounded people who are paying a huge price every day as a result of this occupation and encroachment on their property. The Palestinian people have lost their possessions, lost their land, and are now scattered, while there are those who claim that the land of Palestine is theirs, but we know this land will return to us Palestinians.
The double hypocrisy of the international community is that there is criminal responsibility in Europe for doubts about the persecution of Jews and the so-called Holocaust, then the fact that the Palestinians have become a nation without a homeland, thousands have died and are dying, hundreds of thousands have lost their homes. It's all the same, they don't notice it. It is important for Russia to demonstrate solidarity with the people of Palestine because Russia is a country with soul, feeling the pain of others. To top it off, today the West has unleashed against Russia a piece of the repression that the Palestinians have been subjected for 75 years.
Nakba Day on May 15, 1948, was the fruit of many years during which the Zionist movement and the British planned to create an Israeli occupation entity and expel the indigenous inhabitants from their land.
On the anniversary of the Nakba Day, Moscow reiterated its readiness to continue its support for Palestinians aimed at achieving their legitimate rights and the establishment of their own free state. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
The 5 day Israeli aggression on Gaza has finally come to an end. Dozens of people, including women and children, were killed during the recent Israeli onslaught on the besieged coastal territory. Yet the international community has failed to take any concrete measures against the Israeli regime for its atrocities against Palestinians.
The Gaza Strip, and yet again, another Israeli deadly aggression on the blockaded territory that finally ended following an Egypt-brokered truce on Saturday. The five-day onslaught claimed the lives of over 30 people, including women and children. The Palestinian fatalities included several Islamic Jihad commanders. Khalil al-Bahtini, the commander of the Al-Quds Brigades in the northern Gaza Strip, Tariq Azzeddin, a spokesperson for the Islamic Jihad, who also managed retaliatory operations in the West Bank and Gaza, and Jihad al-Ghannam, secretary of the movement's military council, were all among those assassinated along with their families. A total of 51 Palestinian houses were completely destroyed, while about 1,000 others were damaged, prompting many people across Gaza to become homeless.
Now we are homeless, so we have no choice but to sleep on the street. Everything of us is ruined. I am worried about my children and other family members.
I demand compensation following this ceasefire because we are living on the streets now, no house or anything. My children and their children have no home. We are all left with nothing.
The conflict marked the worst episode of fighting between Gaza's resistance factions and the Israeli regime since the 10-day war in 2021. The carnage was to the extent which drew reaction from the United Nations. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres condemned the Israeli regime's onslaught on Gaza as unacceptable. The UN chief also called on the Israeli regime to immediately stop the bloodshed. Guterres said Israel must abide by its obligations under international humanitarian law, including proportionate use of force and taking all feasible precautions to spare civilians and civilian objects in the conduct of military operations. The UN chief also censured the Israeli closure of Gaza border crossings, which prevented the entry of foodstuff, medical supplies, and fuel into the besieged coastal territory.
During the past several years, Palestinian resistance groups have managed to enhance their military capabilities in the face of the Israeli adventurism. The latest aggression and the assassination of resistance commanders has not only increased the resolve of the Palestinian resistance against an occupying regime, but it has also united all factions in their struggle to liberate Palestine.
The latest Israeli aggression on Gaza brings to the spotlight the power and strength the Palestinian resistance groups have attained during the past several years. A joint statement by resistance factions in Gaza is a testimony to that. The statement said the retaliatory rocket attacks and the steadfastness of resistance fighters messed up the regime's calculations during the recent onslaught on Gaza. It added the new round of fighting with the occupying Israeli regime further strengthened the resistance front. The Zionist enemy mistakenly believed that the time was ripe for assassination of Palestinian resistance leaders, but it was a grave miscalculation. The umbrella group said that Israeli military officials had planned to wrap up the latest onslaught on the Gaza Strip in a very short span of time, but were stunned by the scope of resistance fighters' preparedness and rapid response to air raids. The groups warned Israel against the implementation of the policy of targeted killings, adding that resistance fighters have their fingers on the trigger and will not hesitate to respond in case the regime in Tel Aviv resorts to assassinations. But with Israeli officials admitting that the Islamic Jihad fired 6,000 rockets toward the occupied territories, it seems that the power of Palestinian resistance has already done the job, creating fear and threat among Israeli authorities. With all the fuss about the Israeli Iron Dome, numerous Palestinian rockets managed to intrude into the airspace of the occupied territories and inflict their stated losses. The death of an Israeli settler as a result of those rocket fires during the recent conflict was an indication of that. What seems to be of very high significance is that assassinating Palestinian commanders will not bring security to the Israeli regime and instead will enhance the extent of resistance on the part of Palestinian factions and increase their resolve in the face of the Israeli atrocities. that not only will cost Israel a heavy price in case of any gross miscalculations, as resistance leaders have put it, but will undoubtedly challenge the existence of an occupying regime.
Ukrainian officials have reported a wave of fresh Russian airstrikes on the capital Kiev and its surrounding areas. The head of the city's military administration says the pre-dawn attack was, quote, exceptional in its density as it involved drones, cruise, and probably ballistic missiles. In a social media post, the official claimed, however, that Ukraine was able to repel most of the projectiles. Kiev is said to have suffered its eighth raid this month. Officials in other cities near Kiev have also reported heavy airstrikes without specifying the casualties or damage. The attack comes as Ukraine is preparing to launch a summer counteroffensive against Russia in the embattled eastern regions. A shooting in the southwestern U.S. state of New Mexico has left four people dead, including the suspect. The incident took place in a residential area in the town of Farmington. Two officers were also wounded in the exchange of gunfire with the suspect. Police said there were multiple civilian victims, at least three of whom died. The shooter was believed to have acted alone. So far, there's no details on the reasons behind the attack. The frequency of shooting incidents in the U.S. has increased significantly in recent years. This as politicians remain deadlocked on tighter gun control laws. And that does it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace be upon him, has said, "Whoever remembers us to Ahlul Bayt and his or her eyes fills with tears, his or her face will never burn in the fire of hell."
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
in the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, if you remember, we said that the Islamic Revolution and its unmatched leader, Imam Khomeini, drew the attention of the world thinkers from the very beginning. For a couple of episodes, we have dwelt upon the views of the French thinker Michel Foucault on Imam Khomeini. Today, we will continue the discussion. Michel Foucault believed that not only religion is not the opium of masses, but also it is the spirit of the spiritless world. In view of this, he maintained that religion is the engine which unites various classes in society and brings their forces together towards a common goal. Today we are going to explain Foucault's opinion on the concept of power in the Islamic Revolution. Stay with us, please. French thinker Michel Foucault is of the opinion that power is not limited to a specific group, class, or person. He believes that power has a network structure, which is spread in the whole society like the nervous system. Power is a kind of software and is not necessarily wielded through violent means. Thus, a speech, a book, a tape, a piece of voice or video in the modern form of the medium can be a source of power. The French thinker says that power has been spread in every individual, and if they get united, they will make a power which cannot be confronted with any army or power. He analyzes the Iranian people's confrontation with the armed-to-the-teeth royal army in this framework. Foucault explains why the Shah regime failed to resist against the people despite the high military and economic power. He says that although the Shah's army possessed the most advanced weapons and equipment in the region and enjoyed the consultation of over 40,000 American advisors, it was defeated by the people who sacrificed all they had in the way of their leader. As for the economic power too, the regime enjoyed exorbitant oil revenues which would fill the coffers of the royal family. Foucault maintains that the Iranian society was not that poor to cause the people to topple the ruling system. Of course, this is not true, and poverty can be considered one of the factors for the nationwide uprising of the Iranian people. Michel Foucault fails to understand the depth of the Iranian people's belief in and love of their religious leaders, especially the bravest and most uncompromising of them, Imam Khomeini. Moreover, he has not realized the fact that, except the top brass, the main fiber of the army was formed of popular forces and officers who defied the commands of their top commanders in shooting and killing their compatriots and Muslim brothers. French thinker Michel Foucault relates what he had seen in one of the suburbs of Tehran during the Islamic Revolution. In a very unsafe place around Tehran, my friends made the preparations for my visit with a few top officers who were among the opponents of the Shah's regime. They told me that the more violent the unrest becomes, the regime would be forced to resort to the military units that are neither ready for the job nor have they the motive for it. Moreover, they would understand that they are not facing the international communism, but the ordinary people, the businessmen, employees, or jobless people who are like their brothers or themselves. These people can be forced to shoot only once, but not the second time. 8 months ago, they were forced in Tabriz to change the garrisons. In Tehran, too, although some units have come from other provinces, they were forced to change them. Foucault makes it clear that he has heard that some of the military forces had targeted their commanders or committed suicide the day after shooting the ordinary people. Michel Foucault continues on the Islamic Revolution. What astonished me in Iran is that there is no battle among different elements. What makes all these beautiful and important is that there is only a single confrontation. The confrontation of all people with the power which threatens the people with weapons and police. No need to go very far. This point can be understood instantly. On one side, there is the entire will of the people, and on the other side, there are the machine guns. Foucault compares the Islamic Revolution of Iran with other revolutions and says, Iran's events, in fact, are not found in China, or in Vietnam, or in Cuba. It is a huge wave without a military tool, without a party in the front. It is the first paradoxical phenomenon, and the reason for the hastiness of these events is that people have struggled for 10 months against a regime which is one of the most armed regimes in the world, and that with bare hands, without resorting to armed struggle. They have petrified the army bravely and decisively. Dear listeners, next time we will continue the discussion.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. 75 years since 750,000 Palestinians were driven out of their country, and at least 15,000 Palestinians had been killed by 1949. The excuse of giving a land without people to a people without land was Zionist and Western propaganda from the very beginning, as this land had been populated by Palestinians for thousands of years. There were 1 million Palestinians living in Palestine at that time. There was collusion between political entities and world media and a complex and violent project to steal Palestine from Palestinians. And that project continues today to try to legitimize an illegitimate entity as Palestinians continue to resist the Zionists and their supporters. We're going to be taking a look at the 75 years since the Nakba today on The Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Fra Hughes, author and director, Palestine Aid Belfast, out of Belfast. And Charlotte Cates, international coordinator, Samadun Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network, out of Vancouver. Thank you both for being with me. Well, Fra, let's start off. I mean, if there's one entity more responsible for the existence of the Israeli regime, it would probably be the United Kingdom and its role in the Balfour Agreement and giving land to others which it didn't own. I mean, shouldn't London be held responsible? Are we likely to see compensation coming from the UK for Palestinians anytime?
Well, if we look at the history of the Zionist movement, it was around 1888 that they had their first Zionist Congress in Basel in Switzerland. And they were actually looking at Uganda and Madagascar, and also they were looking at Argentina as possible settlements and colonizations for the new project of Zionism. And like long before the Balfour Agreement in 1917, we had the Jewish National Fund, which I believe was a British-inspired institution, collecting money on behalf of the Zionist movement in order to buy land from the absentee Ottoman landlords. So we can go before Balfour to see a part being played by the British and by the Jewish National Fund. And yes, Balfour did promise the Zionist movement a place inside historic Palestine, while they encouraged the Palestinians to join Lawrence of Arabia and the British expeditionary forces in the Middle East to fight the Ottomans during the First World War. They promised the Arab peoples that they would have sovereignty and freedom, and that they would have their own governments and be self-determination states going forward. And they lied to the Arab people. They lied to the Palestinians. They had a secret agreement, the Balfour Agreement, between Lord Rothschild and Lord Balfour on behalf of the British government. So, you know, after the First World War, they then had the British and French mandate across the Middle East. So while promising people freedom and sovereignty, what they did was they actually replaced the Ottoman Empire with British and French spheres of influence, and they allowed the State of Israel to come into being. So Britain is wholly, not just partly, but wholly responsible for everything that has happened in historic Palestine. All the murders, I believe, that were carried out recently by the apartheid regime in Gaza. And I offer my condolences to those who were murdered and the many others, the hundreds of others who were injured. Britain is primarily responsible for everything that happened before 1948. And America is really responsible for everything that's happened subsequent to 1948. I don't think America, because let's not forget, it's American musicians that are murdering unarmed civilian Palestinians, men, women, and children. Okay. It's destroying their homes and their infrastructure. But I don't think the British will pay any reparations.
All right. Thank you, Fra. Well, Charlotte, I want to go back to the end of World War II, because what was said is that millions of Jews had been killed and that their homeland then should be Palestine. What logic could justify that the Germans killed millions of Jews, as they say, but then the Palestinians should be uprooted? I mean, how was it even justified? It's really baffling when we go back and look at this.
Because this is the logic of imperialism and colonialism. It's very clear when we look at the history of Western collaboration with the Nazi regime prior to World War II. It's very clear when we look at the history of Jews being denied entry to the United States and to Canada when they were fleeing Nazism. It's very clear that what happened in occupied Palestine was not a response to the crimes of the Nazi Holocaust. What happened in occupied Palestine was an attempt to use those crimes to instead enact a Western colonial project of destruction and division in the Arab world, and by using the Zionist movement in occupied Palestine. I mean, this was just like today, when we see the German state banning Palestinians from holding protests in Berlin to commemorate 75 years of Nakba and the ongoing struggle for liberation and return, this isn't something that's being done because of guilt over the crimes of the Holocaust. This is something that's being done as an active crime against the Palestinian people, not as any form of reparations to Jewish people. And it's time to put that lie to rest, because the reality is that the Israeli occupation is an imperialist project, it's a Zionist project, it's not a project that serves any form of justice or reparations for any people who have been oppressed in the world.
Well, Fra, I mean, what is it about the Zionists that sovereign countries such as the UK and the US also allowed Zionist terrorists to kill their own citizens to establish or expand the illegal entity of Israel? I mean, we look at the UK and the mandate, when the British mandate was ending, and how British troops were killed by Zionist terrorists. And, of course, we know the USS Liberty, the American ship that was attacked by Zionists, and neither country did anything. I mean, why would they be so subordinate to this entity? Or is it because the entity is serving their interests, which is more important than the people's, their own people's rights?
Yes, if you separate this out into two different aspects, the first aspect is the death and murder of British troops by the Stern Gang, the Haganah, the Irgun, and others. British troops are just purely cannon fodder for the British government and their foreign policy. When we look at how many people died in the First World War in the trenches, they didn't care about sending tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of troops on ill-fated marches across no man's land to be gunned down by German gunners. So the British government cares nothing for British troops. The American state and the American government cares nothing for the sailors on that ship that was sunk, I believe, by Zionist aircraft whenever that was. I think it was the 67 war. Mm-hmm. So when you separate out the people from the governments and you separate out the interests from the elite political class that is in government and that is in hand with corporations and now the globalist corporations that want to take over the world, what we see mainly is that they will use even the death of their own troops in Palestine in 1948 as an excuse to leave in order to create the apartheid state. And America cares nothing for its soldiers who died in Vietnam, for the people who died in Afghanistan and Iraq. They're just cannon fodder. And we see Western governments and the mainstream media continue to define the war in the Middle East along parallels of Israel is this plucky little nation that has its back to the sea, facing a hostile environment of of Persian and Arab countries who want to destroy it. That is so far from reality that I'm amazed so many people believe it. But yes, it is foreign policy and the American, British, and I include the EU hegemonic machinations within the Middle East and West Asia. Ursula von der Leyen recently said that they made the desert bloom and on the 75th anniversary of the creation of the Israeli state. That tells you everything you need to know about the EU and the people that are running it.
Hmm. Interesting point. Well, Charlotte, let's talk about the role of the United Nations in trying to legitimize this illegitimate entity. I mean, if we look at 1 year after the Nakba, the Zionists had stolen 78% of Palestinian land. And then in May of 1949, Israel was recognized as an independent state by the United Nations. I mean, what does this say about the role of the United Nations in actually helping to establish and legitimize or try to legitimize the Israeli regime?
Well, it certainly also reflects that history, that these votes largely came before the great anti-colonial movements that won liberation in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. And that's one reason why these votes were able to happen the way that they did, because these were essentially votes to legitimize the ongoing process of European colonialism in the Arab world and in the broader region that essentially the crimes of the Western powers could be covered over by yet more colonial adventures, again, by confiscating the land and expropriating the land while expelling the indigenous people of occupied Palestine. And what we've seen from, you know, 75 years ago until today is that the United Nations as an entity, despite the ongoing voices of many countries around the world, particularly the non-aligned movement, particularly Asian, African, Arab, certainly the Iran, Latin American countries, that what we continue to see is this domination and the use of the veto by the United States in order to prevent any kind of meaningful interaction by the United Nations in occupied Palestine. So today we do see the United Nations recognizing the Nakba. We see, you know, special rapporteurs at the United Nations performing, you know, meaningful inquiries into what's happening in occupied Palestine. But at the same time, the United Nations has never done what it needs to do, which is actually expel this occupying power, this illegitimate entity, from its body. If we're going to say that colonialism is contrary to international law, if we're going to say that apartheid is contrary to international law, then it's time that this so-called state, which is based solely on colonialism, apartheid, occupation, racism, and the dispossession of the indigenous people of the land, is not a legitimate state, is not a legitimate entity, and is something that only exists because it's propped up by $3.8 billion of weaponry given it every year by the United States.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Currently, there are 6 million Palestinians living in the diaspora who either have been expelled from their homes or are descendants of those who have been. 14 million Palestinians in total, many who are internally displaced. Either way, according to international law, expelling people from their homes or preventing them from returning is a war crime. So when do you think we're going to see Israeli regime leaders charged with war crimes? What will it take?
Well, it's never going to happen. If we agree that Israel is a white European colonization of Palestine, let us look to the past. Let us look to America, when white Europeans went to Canada, when they went to North America, when they went to Australia and New Zealand. They wiped out the indigenous population. They replaced the indigenous population. They said in North America, the only good Indian is a dead Indian. And I see parallels in Palestine that probably the right-wing Zionist Israelis who vote for the likes of Ben-Gvir probably think that the only good Palestinian is a dead Palestinian. You mentioned the UN. There are so many resolutions passed at the UN, even with American vetoes in place, that Israel has never accepted. Resolution 194, the right of return. You mentioned about the displacement of the ethnic population under an illegal occupation. That is in violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention. The fact that Israel can murder 33 people in Gaza over 4 days with absolutely no recrimination from any of the Western leaders. In fact, we have the opposite. We have lip service. We have the UN and the EU, we have America and Britain saying we must put an end to the settlements, we must halt the settlement projects, we must step back from the abyss, we must bring people to the table. I know Egypt is permanently involved in the ceasefires that are developed between the Zionist regime and the resistance movements in Gaza. But even then, this all fits into a narrative that suits Israel. They can murder with impunity, and then whenever they need political fig leaf cover from politicians in the West, it is always there. The intention of Israel is to occupy the whole of Palestine, which you can see them doing day by day, incrementally, in the West Bank. And at some stage, they will have either a false flag, or they will just, through economic starvation of the people of the West Bank, the occupied West Bank and Gaza, they will try and force the Palestinians to flee. There'd be no war crimes tribunal for the Israeli leaders. If we go back to Sharon, I mean, he was the butcher of Shabra and Shatila in Lebanon. These people have blood in their hands, they have hate in their hearts, and they have greed on their minds as they fill their own pockets with money and try to stay in power, as Netanyahu is trying to do for as long as possible. And I believe the attack, recent attack on Gaza, was to distract the Israeli population from their own internal troubles around these proposed judicial reforms. Netanyahu had them hiding in their bunkers so that they weren't at his front door.
Well, Charlotte, Fry was talking about the United Nations and the international community in general, and we saw a few hours ago Mahmoud Abbas addressing the UN on the Nakba Day. I found it quite interesting that nothing was even said about what just took place in Gaza, because we're talking about that the international community hasn't mentioned anything, whatever. I mean, even Mahmoud Abbas, when he was talking about the Nakba on the 75th anniversary, did not even mention that this major situation that has just taken place, and people, of course, are still suffering from the after effects. Let's talk about a little bit about that side of things and the whole Palestinian, because we know with certain aspects of Palestinian leadership, there has been some collusion helping, unfortunately, the Israeli regime. Your take.
Well, yeah, the Palestinian Authority was created as part of the Oslo process. It was actually created to take the Palestinian resistance and liberation movement and instead co-opt it and transform it into a mechanism of repression and security that would serve the security of the occupier rather than the security of the Palestinian people. This is why the basic part of the Oslo Accords is security coordination. That means pursuing the resistance, arresting resistance fighters, and putting them in jail, and pursuing a revolving door policy where Palestinian prisoners are detained in Palestinian Authority jails, only to be detained in Israeli jails, only to be detained in Palestinian Authority jails. And that's not because the PA is kind of a rogue human rights violator. This is the reason why the PA's security forces are funded by the United States, trained by Canada, trained by the European Union, is to serve as a mechanism of security for the occupation. And this has always been the case in colonial projects. There's always an attempt to find a local partner that, in order to serve kind of the interest of a narrow economic class that will benefit from having kind of advantages for capital investment or for profit, repress the majority of the Palestinian people. And so, you know, the Palestinian Authority's function is to repress Palestinian resistance. But what's been clear in this battle that's taken place over the past week in Gaza is that the Palestinian people are with the Palestinian resistance. And we see that every day in the West Bank. We see that in Nablus. We see that in Jenin. We see that increasingly in more areas throughout the West Bank, is that the PA quote-unquote security control of these areas because the people are with the resistance. And we saw that in Gaza, where the masses of people celebrated the achievements of the resistance and, more deeply, the assassination of the martyrs of leaders of the resistance who have given so much in the struggle. But despite all of this, despite the creation of the PA, despite the path of Oslo, which we can see that 30 years later is a complete failure for the Palestinian people. It's very obvious, and the resistance continues to demonstrate on the ground on a daily basis that the only alternative is resistance, revolution for liberation from the river to the sea, and that our responsibility, particularly those of us in Western countries in the imperial core that are providing the money, the arms, the diplomatic, political, military support to the occupation to continue these crimes, is to do everything that we can to shut down the war machine that's attacking the Palestinian people and to extend all of our support as a popular international cradle of the resistance to support those who are on the front lines, those who are defending not only the Palestinian people, but the entire region and all of humanity from the ravages of Zionism and imperialism. Mm.
Well, assassinating revolutionaries and those who resist Israeli terrorism have been a trait of the Zionist regime since its inception. Killing Palestinians who could lead their people's resistance is a modus operandi of the Zionists. But despite this, we see, as Charlotte has just mentioned, strong resistance leadership, more united leadership, and we see now more and more Palestinians actually following the resistance and praising the resistance. Your overall perspective of where this goes from now, because we're looking at, it seems, more solidarity and more effectiveness on the part of the resistance. Your take.
Yes, we can see from the likes of the Operation Room in Gaza, where you have several of the resistant groups coming together to act. Once upon a time, they would only have acted in their own interests, in their own narrow political field. But we can see more and more that if you kill someone in Hamas, or you kill someone in Islamic Jihad, or you kill someone in the PFLP, they are all seeing each other die as comrades and as martyrs. And it's bringing them together in a stronger, more unified bond.
Okay, stay with me, Frank, because I just want to get this last question into Charlotte. Sorry. But Charlotte, despite efforts trying to change the real narrative of Palestine online, there is growing awareness worldwide about Israeli terrorism. Do you think efforts from around the world will ultimately help Palestinians, or do you think the ultimate victory has to come from within Palestine and from the resistance itself?
The victory is going to come from the Palestinian people, from their resistance, from the Arab people, from the people of the region. But the struggle is Palestinian, Arab, and international in nature. And so it can be all of our victory if we all do everything that we can to strengthen the voice of the resistance, to provide the support that it needs, and to make sure that we are doing everything we can to stop our governments from their continuing complicity and participation in these crimes.
And I thank you both for a very interesting discussion. Fra Hughes, author and director at Palestine Aid Belfast, out of Belfast. Charlotte Cates, international coordinator, Samadun, Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network, out of Vancouver. And as always, we appreciate you being with us for another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Hope to see you right here next time. Goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering it down some questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah who is الرحمن.
Allah
who is المنان.
لا إله إلا الله.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program. Brother Suhail is here to answer our questions. Assalamu alaikum, brother. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you, dear viewers. Thank you, brother.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Inshallah, 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 you'll find your way.
So, Brother Suhail, nobody has a clear picture of what happens after death. There are some ayahs in the Holy Quran, some ahadith, but as long as you are put in the grave, it is believed that two angels called Nakir al-Munkar come to you, ask some questions. Is it true? Is it documented?
So we have some traditions that explain this questioning. For example, in Bihar al-Anwar, Imam Jafar Sadiq is quoted to have said that not among our followers, yani Shias, is one who denies three things: the ascension to heavens, the questioning in the grave, and the intercession. You see? So, regarding the questioning to the grave, it has been reported that two angels, Munkir and Nakir, come in a terrifying form. Here I would like to say that this terrifying form is normally used for someone who does not have any preparation when he dies. So they say that Munkir and Nakir, if you do a bit of research, they are just normal angels that come to you and ask questions. But because you have made yourself polluted with shaitanic desires in this world and the way you left this world without repenting, without anything, so that kind envisions you to view them as something bad or something evil. It's because of your own deeds. For here we see that their voice is like a thunder, their eyes like lightning. They will ask the dead person, who is your God, who is your prophet, what is your religion, and other questions. And since the answers under those conditions are very difficult, people are not able to answer them. But at the same time, if they had good deeds in those times when they asked, they come in a form of a word and they start helping him in saying those words. And the other place is that after the deceased person is put into the grave and buried, it is recommended. So here we are now talking about talqin.
Yes.
Yeah. So we have a tradition that talqin should be recited two times.
The death recitation, you know, the formula which is written, yeah, recited when the person is deceased.
Is, okay. The deceased person is down where he's supposed to also shake while
reading the body. That's right.
The recitation, where the question and answers are supposed to help the dead person listen and be able to reply, have mm-hmm. the courage to reply to those questions that are down. While the other place is after everyone has left, the family member or the mulaqin, the one who is going to do yes. talqin, he comes again and recites talqin again over the grave, whether it's a close relative or what. And so this is a recommended act of which it can be used to remind the person who is dead to know the answers to those questions. Where Munkir and Nakir, Munkir will say to Nakir, according to some traditions, let us go back, for they have taught him talqin of evidence, and he needs no questioning, whereupon they both leave. So talqin is being recited, the answer is also being given through talqin. If the believer enters the grave, prayer come at his right, zakat come at his left, as kindness and benevolence look on. As for perseverance, it will stand aside. When both angels, Munkir and Nakir, will come to question Munkir and Nakir, perseverance will address prayer and zakat and kindness. Help your fellow, meaning deceased person, and if you cannot, I am ready also. So you'll find this kind of acts and deeds that we have done in this world will come as a support and guidance over there. Where out of them, we have a separate narration as well. Then we'll have one specific word or light that will come to help. that is the light of wilaya and guidance, like the wilaya of Amirul Mumineen alayhi salam, that would also be there as a guide.
Also believing Imam Al Hussein alayhi salam, the shafa of Imam Al Hussein,
yeah,
will help, will be very much helpful. What kind of questions will be asked? Is it about the beliefs or a taqadat or something?